Canon, it is a unique text, Esther. It is the only book in our Holy Scriptures that makes no direct reference to God. God is never named or mentioned in the 10 chapters of Esther, but there is no doubt that God is at work in this narrative. The first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, are known as the five books of Moses, or the Torah, or the Pentateuch. In these books, we find the stories of the beginning of the world and the choosing of the people of Israel as the people of God. And we also find the law given to those people as a way to set them apart, so important that it is recorded twice in these first five books. And then, beginning with Joshua, we have 11 history books recounting the trials and travails of the Israelites once they have reached the promised land, the times of the judges and the times of the kings, and then exile and then return. And all but one of the books in that run, all but Ruth, cover large swaths of history, involve many characters and many plot lines over many years. Ruth is more of a personal account, the story of the lives of a small group of people, Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz. And then eventually we reach Esther, along with Liz, one of my favorite texts in all of Scriptures. In the vein of Ruth, the story of Esther is relatively narrow in its scope, relaying the experience of the title character and those who are closest to her, as well as any impacted by the actions of the king. The king was Ahasuerus, also known as Xerxes, which was his Greek name. And since Xerxes is much easier to pronounce than Ahasuerus, we'll stick with Xerxes for today. Xerxes was king of Persia, from India to Ethiopia, over 127 provinces. In the third year of his reign, Xerxes gave a banquet for all of his princes and attendants, the army officers, and the nobles and princes of his provinces. It was a lavish affair that lasted 180 days. The guy knew how to throw a party. At the end of the 180-day party, the festivities concluded with a banquet that lasted 7 days. According to the first chapter of Esther, there were white cotton curtains and blue hangings tied with cords of fine linen, and purple to silver rings and marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and colored stones. Drinks were served in golden goblets, goblets of different kinds, and the royal wine was lavished in accordance with the bounty of the king. Drinking was by flagons, without restraint, for the king had given orders to tell all of the officials of his palace to do as each one desired. In other words, it was lush. And, as an aside, we are told that the queen, Queen Vashti, also gave a banquet for the women in a separate palace. At the end of the 7-day banquet, when King Xerxes was good and drunk, he bid his queen Vashti to come and to show herself off to all the other drunk men at his party. The text says it was in order to show the peoples and the officials her beauty, for she was fair to behold. But it may well have been for more nefarious purposes than that. Well, Vashti refused the king's order. And this, of course, surprised the king. And so he did what any good husband would do. He went to Vashti, he apologized for making her feel like a possession to be displayed, and he begged her pardon. I'm just kidding. He was drunk, and he had way too much power. So instead, Xerxes gathered his equally drunk friends together and asked them what he should do, which is always, we know, a good choice. They put their heads together, and this is what they came up with. Not only has Queen Vashti done wrong to the king, but also to all the officials and all the peoples who are in all the provinces of King Xerxes. For this deed of the queen will be made known to all women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands, since they will say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, and she did not come. This very day, the noble ladies of Persia and Media who have heard of the queen's behavior will rebel against the king's officials, and there will be no end of contempt and wrath. If it pleases the king, let a royal order go out from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it may not be altered, that Vashti is never again to come before King Xerxes, and let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So when the decree made by the king is proclaimed throughout all his kingdom, vast as it is, all women will give honor to their husbands, high and low alike. You can't make this up, I promise you. And so in order to keep all of the women in the kingdom in line, Vashti was deposed, and the search for a new queen began. The search, as you can imagine, was no small endeavor. Beautiful virgins from all over the kingdom were brought to the capital, Susa, given a makeover worthy of reality television, and paraded before the king for him to admire and ultimately to choose a new queen. Now, it so happened that a devout Jew by the name of Mordecai was living in Susa at that time. He had taken custody of his late uncle's daughter, Esther, and he was raising her as his own. Esther, we are told, was fair and beautiful. Beautiful enough to be selected for the king's harem from which he would choose his next queen. And so Esther was taken in and given the ultimate beauty treatment for 10 months. Eventually, Esther was taken in to see the king, and the king loved her more than all the other women. And so he placed the royal crown on her head, and she became the queen of Persia. Now, if this were a Disney film, they would have all lived happily ever after, the end. But it is not, and so there is more. Act 2. Shortly after Esther was made queen, Mordecai became aware of a plot on the part of two of the king's officials to assassinate the king. And so Mordecai informed Esther of the plot, and Esther in turn informed the king. The matter was investigated and found to be true. So the two officials were hanged, and the matter and the role that Mordecai played in it was recorded in the book of the Chronicles of the King. Now, this is important to keep in mind, for things are about to turn dire for Mordecai and his fellow Jews. A man named Haman was promoted by the king and given authority over all of the provinces. He became, in effect, the king's right-hand man. Chapter 3 of Esther relays thus: all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and did obeisance to Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down or do obeisance. Then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" When they spoke to him day after day and he would not listen to them, they told Haman, in order to see whether Mordecai's words would prevail, for he had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or do obeisance to him, Haman was infuriated. But he thought it beneath him to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So having been told who Mordecai's people were, Haman plotted to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. Thus, all of the Jews in Persia were put in peril. Now Haman took audience with the king and said to him, "There is a certain people scattered and separated among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not inappropriate for the king to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued for their destruction, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, so that they may put it into the king's treasuries." The people, of course, were the Jews. And so the king agreed and gave Haman the authority to carry out the genocide of the Jews. Now Mordecai learned of Haman's plot, and he despaired greatly. He tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city wailing loudly and bitterly. But once he got his wits about him, he sent word to Esther, warning her of what was coming and pleading with her to beg the king for mercy on behalf of the Jews. Now Esther was dismayed and she was conflicted. Of course, she did not want this massacre to take place, killing her own people. But she also knew that she risked her own death by seeking audience with the king without being invited by him first. There were some serious marital issues at work here. And so she balked and she stalled. But Mordecai insisted and sent his word to her through her attendants. Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter, but you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this. Inspired by his words, Esther fasted, prayed, and agreed to petition the king to save her people. She invited the king and Haman to a great banquet, and he agreed to attend. One night, as preparations were being made for the banquet, the king could not sleep, and so he tried to bore himself back to sleep by reading the history books, the books of the chronicles of the king. It was there that he came upon the story of Mordecai saving his life and inquired what had been done to honor him. Nothing had been done, it turned out, and so he declared that Mordecai should be honored properly. Irony of ironies, it was Haman that the king put in charge of the ceremonies to honor Mordecai. When Queen Esther's banquet took place, the king very much enjoyed the festivities and eventually asked his queen, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom it shall be fulfilled." And here was Esther's chance. "If I have won your favor, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given to me. That is my petition. And the lives of my people, that is my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. If we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have held my peace. But no enemy can compensate for this damage to the king." Then King Xerxes said to Queen Esther, "Who is he, and where is he, who has presumed to do this?" Esther said, "A foe and an enemy, this wicked Haman." And with that, the king's eyes were opened to how he had been duped by Haman. So he ordered Haman to be hanged on the gallows that Haman had built for Mordecai. And the Jews of Persia were saved from annihilation. And they all lived happily ever after. Sort of. Well, maybe not really. It is a compelling story, smack dab in the middle of our Holy Scriptures. It is a story of courage and faith and redemption. God may not be mentioned by name, but there is no doubt that God was active in this tale. And in the middle of this story, at the turning point of it all, we find a gem of a verse. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this. For such a time as this. And it was so. Esther had come to be queen so that she could save her people from their destruction. For such a time as this. Who knows? Perhaps you have been called to CMPC for such a time as this. Perhaps you have been called to serve as an elder or a deacon, as a teacher or a singer, as a ringer or a greeter, as a table parent or as a missionary, as a committee member or a Bible study leader. Who knows? Perhaps you have been called to give to the work of the kingdom here at CMPC for such a time as this. To give generously and sacrificially to our capital campaign as we launch next week. To grow in your giving to our annual operating budget so we can continue to expand our ministries and missions. For such a time as this. It is a belief that there is an added sense of urgency and importance in these days, that the weeks and the months to follow may well define our future as a congregation, that we have an opportunity to take advantage of a groundswell of energy and excitement for the work of the Spirit in and from this very special place, for such a time as this. How might the Lord be working on your heart these days? What might God be calling you to do in and through this congregation to serve God's purposes in the world, to join in the inbreaking of the kingdom in our midst, to do your part in accomplishing God's will for this world? For such a time as this, Esther risked nothing short of death, for the king could have had her killed simply for requesting audience with him. Yet she persevered because she knew something greater was at risk. Or perhaps, more importantly, she sensed that something greater was at work. Do you sense that too? Because I do. And it is my great desire for myself and for our whole congregation that we not miss that. Not miss our chance to say yes, to be a part of the work of the Lord. For such a time is this. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.